Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 296. The draft was awesome. We're back to Bloom Board season, getting ready for the 2026 draft season, talking steamer projections in regard to some pitching risers and fallers. We'll get to that, some news, and much, much more. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
We are great, man. It's been a awesome freaking week. The Gladiator draft on Tuesday night was a ton of fun. We are working on a kind of a Q&A roundtable recap with a bunch of the folks that participated in the draft with us, our good friends in the Discord. So we'll have that up. Probably post that for free over on Patreon so our free folks can check that out. James Franklin's a Virginia Tech Hokie. Josh Naylor's a Seattle Mariner. It's been a good week. It's been a great week.
Yeah, it's only going to go down from here, Ryan. So,
yeah.
That's given the Mariners did say that their next targets are Eugenio Suarez and one other guy you're about to lose.
Polanco. So, they want to bring back. Polanco. They want to bring back, which let's give it some time. Nostalgic there. Naylor was the priority for me.
Naylor was definitely the priority. That's for sure. I could see Eugenio being a decent priority as well.
Sure.
Yeah. The Polanco one was probably the last of the priorities for me if I'm a Mariners fan. But let's talk about it. Josh Naylor, 5-year deal, less than $100 million total, which I think is an outstanding number to look at. No trade clause, so he's going to be in Seattle most likely for the duration of this 5-year deal. What are your thoughts here? It's a big move for a team that's really not had a steady first baseman in a while.
It's been a long time since the Mariners have had a steady first baseman. Obviously, I mean, from a fan standpoint, thrilled, of course. It's interesting the kind of the aggressiveness with Seattle and getting this done now. And I think at a much lower total value of the contract in AAV than almost everyone thought.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's not to get too far off base. I don't know if that's potentially lockout risk driven for 2027. There could be some of that in play, but whatever. From a fantasy standpoint, this obviously works for Josh Naylor. We don't love the park. We don't love T-Mobile for hitters, but Josh Naylor's not a super power bat anyway. I think if you get 20 bombs out of Josh Naylor, that's fine. I think the biggest thing fantasy wise is how wild Josh Naylor ran with Seattle. And granted, that's in the second half of the season, postseason. Well, you know, there's a lot at stake. Will that hold up over an entire season? We will see. But I think when you're trying to project stolen bases for Josh Naylor in 2026, I think you probably need to now take the optimistic side of what a typical projection might tell you and lean a little bit more towards what Josh Naylor did in 2025. So I think fantasy wise, that's probably the biggest takeaway. It's still a great lineup. Yeah. You don't love the park for power, but had a green light in Seattle. I don't see why at least some of that won't continue.
Yeah. I'm with you there. The lockout comment I can see coming from anybody right now, because I was actually surprised so many qualifying offers were accepted, because I figure guys are trying to get those multi-year locked-in deals before things might get locked out. But who knows? Hopefully it's a positive thing that so many didn't. But to your Naylor point, it all comes down to the speed. He's going to be locked in with that lineup, a very good lineup still. And right now in NFBC ADP, DC's ADP is around 74. He's gone as low as 63. Recently, so it's a middle of the pack deal. But if you look at ADP, a lot of your first basements you're probably interested in go in the first like 90 picks. So Naylor fits that mold as well.
I was gonna say Naylor being one of them, and as he should be, in my opinion.
Definitely. All right, let's take one more thing. This broke live during the draft on Tuesday night, so we got some instant reactions there from me and you. We got some instant reactions from Burks and the rest of the chat. And then I went on Twitter later that evening, and it's about what you'd expect when this trade went down. The Baltimore Orioles traded Grayson Rodriguez to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim for Taylor Ward. Now, Rodriguez is under contract at least until 2029, so that's a plus. Ward's a free agent after this season. Grayson is supposed to start throwing bullpens in January and be ready for spring training. Taylor Ward's Taylor Ward. So I'll let you decide where you want to start with this, but I was as surprised as most with this one.
Pretty nuts. It broke, I think, in like the fourth round of our draft, and Taylor Ward and Grayson were both subsequently picked later on in the draft. That was pretty cool. I mentioned on the live stream last night the perceived drop in park factor from Anaheim to Baltimore is not, I think it's like fourth and 12th in terms of right-handed hitters, in terms of home runs, dropping that park factor from Anaheim to Baltimore. So not really that big of a drop. And I think what more of them makes up for it is what I think should be a much better lineup in Baltimore. I think just as a team, the talent in that lineup, maybe Adley Rutschman excluded. Get your thoughts on that. It should be a much better lineup in 2026 than it was in 25. So I like that for Taylor Ward. That probably washes out the park factor downgrade. I mean, you've got a better pulse on playing time just in general than I do. Like, there's a lot of pieces in that outfield now in Baltimore, which I'm not really worried about for Taylor Ward necessarily, but some of those other guys, playing time could be a little bit sketchy.
Yeah, because we mentioned on the show last night, Jeremiah Jackson was in a platoon with Dylan Beavers in left field. You already had Colton Cowser locked into center field, and Tyler O'Neill was in O'Neill was in left field. The others were platooning in right field, sorry. Well, it's been updated, and this surprised me, but I kind of understand it. So Taylor Ward starting left, Cowser starting in center. Tyler O'Neill goes to the bench. Jeremiah Jackson's on the bench, obviously. Dylan Beavers is in the platoon in right field. So O'Neill could platoon with Beavers. O'Neill likely, this is where it gets interesting, platoons at DH with Basayo. And that's where things get ugly, if that takes place, because it's a combination of things. Basayo, we wanted to play at least 5 days a week. The team has stated they want to play him as much as possible between DH, first base, and catcher. So that could be a wrinkle to keep an eye on. I think it's more like this is a problem until Tyler O'Neill gets hurt, but it still affects Dylan Beavers and Jeremiah Jackson a lot as well. So the young players are going to get squeezed here for a bit. And Heston Kjerstad has no path to playing time right now, if you had any hope in him. So there's got to be another trade coming, because the biggest thing that surprised me, besides Grayson even being wanted in a trade, is the Orioles need starting pitching. Like, they need starting pitching help, and they got rid of Grayson. Now they have this slew of young, talented outfielders. You'd imagine some sort of trade has to be brewing, you would hope. And, like, there's been rumors at the end of last season that Adley Rutschman's on the block. Like, they could trade him with someone else to a team that needs a catcher. Like, they're not locked into Rutschman for the rest of his career, as it seemed it was like a year or two ago. There's going to be a lot of moving pieces in Baltimore in the next, you know, month or two.
What about on the Grayson side? There seems to be a universal, like, oh crap, he is now an Angel. Similar to what we saw last offseason when Yusei Kikuchi signed with the Angels and everyone downgraded Kikuchi pretty much universally. Does not give me the warm and fuzzies. We've both been very anti-Grayson. I don't think that has changed given these, you know, optimistic health reports. But Grayson Rodriguez going to the Angels doesn't do much for me.
Not at all. And it's a combination of the dude didn't throw in 2025. Like, he did not go on a mound in 2025. He threw in 2024, but it got cut short, obviously. He's never thrown more than 122 innings in a season. I'll reiterate, he didn't pitch in 2025. Let me back that one up again. Brendan Tuma, friend of the show, had a tweet out there that made me laugh. It starts out with Grayson Rodriguez since the second half of 2023, 193 and a third innings, 203 Ks, a 3.35 ERA, 3.31 FIP, 1.18 WHIP, 18.4% K to walk. Outstanding numbers. That's only 33 starts since the end of 2023. So we just haven't seen Grayson. They're saying he's going to be ready, but it's a combination of how many innings. Do you trust his health? He's going now. Some Angels fans, bias aside, did point out the Angels had brought in Mike Maddux to be a pitching coach this year. That's a very good veteran pitching coach. So that's like an upgrade compared to what the Angels have had in the past. That doesn't help the actual injury situation with Grayson. But like, to the Kikuchi point, Maddux might be a better option in that regard. But yeah, I'm not sold until I see him stay healthy to even care about if they can fix him or not.
I know. Agreed. Full agree. So not confident.
Downside. No, not confident at all. So hopefully it works out. If it does, 2027 will be a fun conversation. But for now, I'm just going to salute him if he figures it out. All right. Bloom board time. Let's get to it. Steamer, we did hitters last week. Let's do pitching this week, Ryan. What do we got cooked up?
All right. Yeah, similar deal here as the hitters last week. We are looking at the biggest projected risers and fallers in Steamer based on basically a combination of ERA and WHIP. At first, I was just going to do ERA, but we got to give WHIP its time in the sun. It counts just as much as ERA does. And judging from my Gladiator team projections from the Tuesday night show, my WHIP is good. My ERA is not. So we got to include WHIP here. So basically we're just comparing 2025 numbers versus 2026, combining ERA and WHIP, and who's projected to improve the most in those two surface stats or fall the most. So we've got 15 pitchers in green for those watching on YouTube. In green, those are the projected risers by Steamer. The projected fallers, of course, are in red, led by Trevor Rogers, which isn't all that surprising. I did filter down on the projected improvers. I did filter out anyone who's projected to still suck yet improve.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyone on the riser side, the improver side, had to have a sub, I think 450 ERA is what I put on there. We don't want Mookie Blaylock improving from a 6 ERA to a 5 and showing up on our risers list.
Nope, makes a ton of sense there. Just before we dig in too much, we've talked about it numerous times across multiple shows that Steamer needs to fine tune their projections right now. So just one thing I've noticed doing two pitching Steamer things with Ben is the WHIP number is inflated almost across the board. So keep that in mind. It's like a universal inflation, so that'll help. But when we're talking certain pitchers here, just kind of keep that in mind. Like, they could probably outperform this WHIP if you really do believe in them type conversation.
And if some of these fallers are just projected to be slight fallers, that could just be inflated ratios in Steamer right now.
So just wanted to point that out. Yep, things will change, but it's a talking point as all we're looking for here in November of draft season. All right, so let's talk about those improvers, the risers in the ERA and WHIP department here. And I'm not going to hit on all of these guys just because relevancy, like Charlie Morton, I think we're just going to pass on for the most part this draft season unless you're feeling real frisky out there. I do want to get a quick thought of yours on Ben Brown, though. I know it sounds weird, but Ben Brown's a guy that high expectations, like what Cade Horton did is what people probably thought Ben Brown could be at one point in time. Ben Brown had a 5.92 ERA last year, projected for a 3.34 in 26. That's a big improvement. And they have his WHIP dropping from 1.44 to 1.15. Now, a lot of Brown's work last season after he struggled in the rotation went to the bullpen. He had 10 appearances out of the pen, which maybe helped a little bit with his overall, like his X stats, his XERAs, his CRs and whatnot. But what's your thoughts on Ben Brown? Because there is some stuff with the quote that people hate under the hood that give a little bit of promise, I think.
If not a lot of promise. So, I had Ben Brown's box in the forecaster. Was very impressed with a lot of the skills that I saw, namely the swinging strike rate and your ball percentage. Those are two kind of go-to metrics that are really good. That supports what Ben Brown had last year, which is like a high teens strikeout minus walk rate. I mean, that is really good. And yes, he's been terrible, like a whatever 5 ERA that he had last year. I mean, that is deserved. 5.92 ERA, 1.44 WHIP. Like, that's not great. But I will always lean on the side of speculating on skills like this, especially across all the 15-team drafting holds in NFBC right now. Ben Brown's a 4.78 ADP. Like, why would you not take a stab there? There's nothing to lose unless you start Ben Brown a ton and he gets destroyed, admittedly. But there's really nothing to lose at that price to have someone that has decent skills. Yes, maybe needs a third pitch to improve against lefties a little bit. I grant that. And yes, there's a chance that Ben Brown just stays in the bullpen, maybe as a long man. But I just don't think you see skills like this available outside the top 450 picks in these early drafting holes. And so, yeah, I'm going to take a shot at Ben Brown pretty much every time.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much all of that. The only thing, and you nailed it at the end there, is he is scheduled to start in the bullpen again, especially with Shota coming back. That kind of puts a wrinkle in that. But I'll throw the other part to it. I think you and I both agree it's going to be tough for us to see Matthew Boyd throwing all those innings again. I think Colin Ray, like in reality, Ben Brown's better than Colin Ray. I think we can almost all agree on that universally. But Ray's the veteran that's kind of proved. He's like 35. So like, let's move on from that. And then Jameson Taillon's not a pillar of health these days either. Point being with all that, Ben Brown's opportunity should come sooner than later as long as Javier Assad doesn't stay in the way.
Oh, God.
No, because that's reality, Ryan. We've dealt with
it. I know. You're not just trying to troll me.
Yeah, like that's the sad reality. Colin Ray and Assad have like somehow more of a chance to start than Ben Brown does.
Right. I start twitching every time you mention Javier Assad. Bad memories.
So I just had to bring that up for those out there. Mitchell Parker, I don't have much more to say. He seems he comes up on every Bloom board we've ever done on guys that should be better than they are. Ben Tin and I talked about him forever towards the end of last season. We looked at like upcoming schedules because Parker should have done so well. He just never does. 5.6 ERA, 1.43 whip last year, projected for 4.34, 1.34, which in reality, okay, but not great. I don't have much more on Mitchell Parker besides he projects to be a lot better than he usually pitches.
Yeah, projects to be a lot better than he pitches. Also, barely makes this cut because he's now projected for a 4.34 ERA and 1.34 WHIP. Like those are both well below average. Only thing I would say on Mitchell Parker, and I still will have him probably on a few draft and hold teams, is this was a theme last season. We were using the kind of the starting pitcher planner. A lot of teams suck against lefties, sure, and lefties. I think if you can kind of squeeze out 6 to 7 streaming starts in a season against bad lefty teams for Mitchell Parker, that has value. And again, my brain right now is on draft and hold. We'll probably switch over to Fab League sometime early next year. But like, if I can get someone who I can stream, you know, handful of times, maybe upwards of 10 times during a season against good matchups, I think that works. But I'm certainly not depending on Mitchell Parker being someone who I want to start week in and week out, because yeah, I don't see much in the skills to get me there.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, I'd rather take this next guy, Cade Povich. I've always been a Cade Povich fan. You've laughed at me on Fab shows about my love for Cade Povich, but like similar to Brown is the better talent. I'm not going to deny that by any means. But if you want to keep looking at, you know, skills, Cade Povich has very good skills. Like, yeah, he had a 5.21 ERA and a 1.5 WHIP last year, destroyed you, no doubt about it. He was a streamer last year. He's projected for a 4.22 ERA and a 1.34 WHIP. But this is a guy that I keep saying, like, last year was a 15.4% K to walk. It's because his walk rate ran up to 8.8%. That's not ideal, but it was like 18.4%. That was in AAA. Sorry. In the minors was elite last year. And throughout his minor league career, it's been very, very good. He had a 68% left on base rate last year. That's not, and a 350 BABIP. Like, let's be real about all those scenarios. I mentioned the high ERA to 4.02 Sierra, so they admitted that. His increase to home run to fly ball to 13.4% is something you definitely don't look forward to. It doesn't help that, and it's weird for a guy that gets like a 41% ground ball rate and a 39% fly ball rate. So there's could be some unluckiness to what took place with Cade Povich, but I just want to like highlight the dude's got some pretty good strikeout skills. I feel like he ran real cold, super young. You mentioned the lefty thing with Mitchell Parker. Like, I just, if you're looking at late in a DC, I think there's a lot to at least be intrigued by with Cade Povich.
Yeah, Povich is going slightly ahead of Ben Brown, 4.57. I think the rotation spot is probably safe given whatever the Orioles are doing at this point. But yeah, you nailed the lefty streaming part as well. So everything I said about Mitchell Parker still applies here. And yeah, there's some prospect pedigree with Povich. You mentioned the youth, and you know, I don't know how much that carries over to 2026. I think we kind of are starting to get a feel for who Cade Povich is. And for me, that's mostly a streamer. Bad fastball kind of limits the ceiling here, but at least he misses some bats, decent walk rate. Like, you can get by, but I think most of the time it's going to be matchup based and streaming based for Povich.
All right, let's talk about a guy that's near and dear to my heart. He's currently Ryan's SP1 on his Gladiator team, a guy that we talk about time and time again on Bloom Boards, because even Ryan does admit that, like, under the hood, Dylan Cease is very, very good. And I've echoed it many times. It's 5 straight years of 200Ks. Like, I can't get that out of my brain. That's something that you just don't see in baseball. Yep. If he can just reel in the ratios a little bit, we got good things ahead. So I'll leave the rest up to you, Ryan. What do you got on Dylan Cease, who 4.55 ERA last year, projected for 3.61 this season?
We've talked about Cease a bunch. I won't overstate everything, but the volume is obviously in hand here. Ton of strikeouts, over 210 plus in each of the last five seasons with the innings. So you've got that. Basically the same skills for Dylan Cease when you compare 2024 to 2025, even though the ERA rose by over a full run, the whip went up from 107 to 133 last year. Basically had the same K to walk, same swinging strike, same ball rate. Like, everything was basically the same for Dylan Cease, except for a pretty unfortunate pendulum swing in terms of BABIP. And so what this Steamer projection of a 3.61 ERA, 1.22 WHIP is basically doing is kind of hedging the difference between those seasons, 2024 and 2025. And I think that's probably a fair baseline for Cease. And obviously the good thing that the stat we don't have on this Bloom board is strikeouts, and Dylan Cease, I would wager to bet, would have the highest strikeout number of any of these 30 pitchers that we're showing on the Bloom board for this episode.
Yep, most definitely. I don't have much on Erod, similar to Mitchell Parker. He barely makes this quota. He's projected for a 4.35 ERA and 1.36 WHIP.
Yeah,
I've kind of given up on him. He's between injuries and just full frustration. Because even last year, like, everything said he should have been better than he was, and he never was. So I got nothing else on Erod. I've moved on. He's just not going to be a part of my life right now.
Yeah, agreed.
This guy, though, I know we talked about him a lot in Fab towards the end of the year. And
I was wondering if you were going to skip him, but no, this is your boy.
We're talking Bryce Elder, baby. Bryce Elder, 5.3 ERA and a 1.39 WHIP last year, projected for 4.22, 1.35. So kind of barely makes the criteria still, but yeah, we're talking about a guy that I don't believe in those ratios. He had last year, even with that higher ACR of 4.29, which I'll live with.
It's bad.
Okay. Tell me what you had: a 3.06 BABIP, a 68% left on base rate. And more importantly, like I said, yes, the entire spectrum of his profile, not great. Get it. But the last couple of months of the season, we saw a different Bryce Elder, especially in September and October. And it's a guy we've seen in the past that has shined. Bryce Elder's 26 years old. Like, if you're looking for a late round pick, Bryce Elder's a guy I'm interested in. He's got an ADP of 592 right now. Yeah. Like, keep laughing at 592. Tell me you won't take a chance on 592, Ryan. He had a 22.2% K to walk in September. Like, this is the stuff that you, like, pounded the Casey Mize drum for. Bryce Elder was just as good, if not better, in September than Casey Mize.
All right. I'll live with the last part there. That's decent. And I guess I can't take Bryce Elder at 590 or whatever, because it would just validate you. So,
but that's a great price for, like, a shot.
What other
pitchers are going at 590 that are in the rotation and we've at least seen some success with? Like,
it is. At a 3-point bump from first to second half in swing strike for Bryce Elder. Yeah, it was from 8.
Preach.
It was from 8, which is awful, to 11. Swinging strike, which is we'll say league average. League average is 11.5 on swinging strike rate. So there is that. He threw more strikes while doing it in the second half. And the last thing I don't think you mentioned was the ground ball rate.
No,
Bryce Elder's a consistent ground ball guy, which is always a way to my heart. 50%, 50%, 48% the last three seasons. So that works. Bryce Elder is still not good, but yeah, if you frame it in 600 ADP, I guess I will take a shot.
Like, what I just heard there is I just heard a guy that you've changed your tune on and you might have rostered in some of your teams coming up.
But I can't be too optimistic because it would make you happy. So that's...
I know. I heard...
I got to contain myself. You heard the... This
long enough together. I heard enough optimism out of you. I heard enough in that little segment. So we're good.
Okay, I don't know how many pods out there this off season are diving into Bryce Elder like that, but
You're welcome.
They're probably better off for it than we are.
They're just not recording right now. Next up, Spencer Strider. I'll kind of let you run with this one since I took his teammate's role. I think, you know, Elder might be betting. No, I'm just kidding. Spencer Strider, 4.45 ERA, 1.4 whip. We've talked time and time again of how bad things were. 125 innings. He's projected for a 3.82, 1.23 whip, which in reality still is not Strider-esque. Like, this is an improvement on last year's number, Ryan, but that's not the Spencer Strider we know. So where are you at when you look at this Spencer Strider number?
So I think this is one where you need to, I mean, so by default, what a projection is doing is it's taking the last few years of a player and kind of using that as the basis for the projection for 2026. And I think, and this is no slight to any slight projection system, any specific one, we need to, I think, in my opinion, not use the pre-injury Spencer Strider stats in trying to figure out his 2026. I think this is a different guy than what we saw before he had the internal brace procedure. The velocity was way down. The swinging strikes were way down from peak Strider. I don't think we can use that stuff. I think all we have to go off with Strider is last year, and what we saw last year was not great. I know there's not a long track record of internal brace guys, so maybe there's a chance Spencer Strider just suddenly in year two finds some of this pre-injury version of himself. But I think that's a long shot. And to your point with Strider, like, yes, projected to improve to a 382, 123 whip, that is, like you said, way off of peak Strider. And I would actually probably take the over on both of those numbers. So I am not on Spencer Strider this season. This is one where, given that we don't have the track record with this internal brace, I'm fine sitting this out and making, you know, if I miss on a re-breakout year of Strider, so be it. I just think it's more likely we get what we got last year from Strider, and that wasn't great. And really, like, the trend of last season, second half last year, Strider was worse than he was in the first half. So I'm not there. The way I'll throw it back to you, Bubba, is, since they are teammates, Spencer Strider or Bryce Elder for 2020.
I almost opened with that, but I left it alone for a second. So honestly, especially baking in a price, Strider's still top.
Well,
I'll take Bryce Elder all day.
In a vacuum, Strider, you have to say Strider.
Yes, I still believe Strider's, but you nailed everything I've said multiple times. Also, I actually talked about him recently with Ben, is he's not the same dude right now. Maybe he gets back to it someday, but until I see that velo up consistently, he's able to locate, like, it's not there. And we are open books on this show. I'm okay being wrong on guys. Like, I am. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Right.
Yep.
And if Strider dominates, I think both of us will be like, awesome, because we get to watch him dominate. When Strider's on, it's amazing. Like, that's some of the best TV you got. I just won't have him on my fantasy teams unless, you know, the market all shifts and he drops like pick 170, which isn't going to happen. So, like, yeah, I'm just out. I need to see him revert back, and I don't think he's there yet. Like, he struggled to get 125 innings last year. I kept saying, just stop pitching him. Stop. Like, it's almost like they were just trying to get innings out of him to build him up.
Well, and the other thing too is just, again, early ADP, your other alternatives. Like, why not just take Dylan Cease, Lizardo, Pivetta, Kyle Bradish? Like, yeah. I think all those guys, I like all those guys much, much better than Strider. Those are the pitchers going right around Strider in ADP right now.
Agreed. All right, I'm going to combine two guys here, and we can kind of go back and forth on them and maybe decide why at least I agree with one and not the other type story here. So you got Brandon Pfaadt. He had a 5.25 ERA, 1.33 whip, projected to go 4.33 ERA, 1.28 whip. Then you got Bailey Ober with the 5.1 ERA and a 1.3 whip, so pretty similar to Pfaadt last year. And he's projected for a 4.35, 1.23, very similar to Pfaadt this year. To me, I've already, and you know as well, two different profiles in my mind. Both have home run issues. That's fair. But yeah, the profile after that's different. So where are you at on this? Because I gave my Bailey Ober spiel at FPAS. I think he's just, again, until proven otherwise, done. Brandon Pfaadt, I've always loved. So give me your thoughts on these two before I, you know, take over the stream.
Yeah, you got pretty passionate on that pitcher spotlight panel about Bailey Ober. I had
the place rolling in there, by the way.
Yeah, that was your home run derby joke.
Yes, yes. I had him. Yeah. Biggest pop solid. Just kidding.
I'll start with Pfaadt just because it still pains me to even mention the name. of BO, but I'm very worried about Brandon Pfaadt. I just think he's so hittable, especially against lefties. Improved against lefties a little bit last season, but just think he's so hittable. In the majors, the BABIP's been like 320, 330 every year. And yeah, with pitchers, like I typically think that drops down usually to more to league average than you establish your own. But like, until I see Brandon Pfaadt actually do that, I have to assume he's going to get hit hard. And for the baseball forecaster for Baseball HQ, we have a homer to fly ball rate, right, which is widely used. But we also have a Statcast based expected homer to fly ball rate based on how, you know, exit velocity, launch angle off the pitcher. And pretty much Brandon Pfaadt has deserved these home run issues if you just look at how hard guys hit the ball off of him. Previous years, I could have said all that and say, hey, at least he's still missing bats, getting strikeouts, yada, yada. Swinging strike rate dropped a ton last year, down to single digits, 9.8%. That's bad. Strikeout rate dropped to 19%. That is below average. So it's not like you have any other plus skill at this point to fall back on for Brandon Pfaadt. So this is someone who, like, he's not even young anymore. This is age 27 season for Brandon Pfaadt. It's kind of time to put up or shut up, and I don't see things trending the right direction here.
Yeah, you nailed a lot of it. The confusing part with me is he's like a 42-43% ground ball right guy. So, okay, BABIP might be an issue, but to be that consistently bad is tough. The left on bait rate is horrible, so it's another thing you can kind of like, okay, maybe this should get better. But then the things you nailed is that lower swinging strike rate, the lower strikeout rate, like all that stuff is troublesome. He relies so much on that sinker. Like, he even improved to like 2% usage this last year. It's a horrible sinker, horrible pitch.
Yep.
And he actually introduced a cutter and threw his fastball less, and things just went downhill. So he was tinkering, which one thing tells me he's kind of panicking, going, "What the heck? Like, why isn't this working? Let's change things up." The biggest thing is if he can somehow get rid of that sinker and actually utilize his slider or some other off speed pitch, there might be something there. But again, I'm with you. It's frustrating because we've both been Brandon Pfaadt fans. We're like, hey, if he can just figure out lefties a little bit, yeah, and lower the home run rate, like, the guy's pretty good. So yep, that's frustrating. Now we throw it to Ober and out. The dude's velocity is horrible. Like, it's below 90 miles an hour right now. Literally throws home run derby out there. I have, like, people said, oh, it's his hip. Well, he got his hip, quote unquote, fixed, rehabbed, minor leagues, came back. Didn't matter. It was just dreadful across the board. And he's a guy that I'll have zero shares of this year. Even if it's a buck in an auction, I will not be there on Bailey Ober. So, yeah, he looks like, at least Brandon Pfaadt, I could be like, hey, the velocities were still good. Like, he still looked like the pitcher he's been in the past. Bailey Ober looked broken.
But I think there's a much better chance Bailey Ober's good than Brandon Pfaadt is good. Like, I don't think either of them is going to be good in 26. I think there's a better chance it's Bailey Ober. I think all Bailey Ober needs to have is a full offseason of rest and get the hip right. I don't know if the hip was right at the end of 2025. Like, I don't think there was enough time for them to say it was right. I am not totally shutting the door on Bailey Ober. I want to see what he looks like in the spring. I want to see what the reports are, what the velocity is. If he can go 3-4 innings in some of these spring outings and get back up to 92, then that works. The problem with Bailey Ober is, I don't want to say he's expensive, but like, it's a 260 ADP. Like, that's still someone you are, at least in my 15 team brain, that's still someone you're counting on. And I don't want to have to count on it. So I'm also out on Bailey Ober. I'm leaving that window, that door slightly ajar. If health looks good and if velocity looks good, I think there's at least a path back to Bailey Ober being good. Whereas Pfaadt never has been good in the first place. So that's the difference between the two. Granted, Pfaadt's going like 120 picks later.
So my next question was going to be, is Bailey Ober's ADP is 260 right now in DCs. Yeah. And Brandon Pfaadt is 364.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you grouped them together, so.
I know. That's, I'm just, but I feel like their profiles are extremely similar.
Yeah.
And the projections are good. They're 100 picks apart is where it gets more interesting to me. Just food for thought on a nice November day. All right. you want to talk Sandy at all? I think we saw a guy come back from being broken, showed signs of life after being really broken to start the year. Yeah. I'm interested, but again, we're looking at a guy who had a 5.36 ERA and a 1.27 whip. He's projected for a 4.15 and a 1.32. Like, still aren't great numbers.
Not great numbers. I do think this is someone you need to look at the first half, second half splits, though. Sandy, just given the amount, the long layoff and the command rust that typically comes with rehabs from Tommy John surgery. Second half for Sandy last year was a 3.99 ERA, 1.10 WHIP. That is pretty damn solid with a ton more strikes thrown. The command came back somewhat, not quite to peak Sandy, of course, but the command came back, missed a few more bats. Velocity was up a little bit in the second half. I think if you kind of take the second half for Sandy times two, I think that's a decent outlook for Sandy. And again, that's basically a 4 ERA and a low whip. That's better than what Steamer's pumping out there right now with they've got a 4.15 ERA, 1.32 WHIP. So I'm fine taking Sandy, especially where he's going, like 156.
60-ish, yeah.
That's a SP3, most likely, SP4. I think that's a decent price for Sandy. I think we throw out the first half version of Sandy that was truly awful, and I'm much more leaning towards the second half version of Sandy, which was not peak Sandy, but was still, I would say, an above-average pitcher.
And I'll agree, I'm okay with the ADP, and if that's your SP3, like, I can live with that. It's got to be SP3 or lower, though. Like, I can't have him as one of the top two. That's for sure. Like, if you're a weight on pitcher guy like me, that might not work. But if you're like what I did last night and you're aggressive, let's roll. So we'll see. A couple more here. I don't care about Andrew Pallante. I'm just going to move on from that one. Sonny Gray, we've talked about a million times, kind of like the Dylan Cease thing. I think we're both cool with Sonny. George Kirby, we're cool with George Kirby. You're good there.
Just got engaged. Congrats, George.
Oh, dude. Never mind. I'll stop there. Taj Bradley. Wanted to bring him up. Almost paired him with those two because a similar downfall this last year. Hit a 5.05 ERA, 1.31 whip. Teammates of Bailey Ober now. 4.13 projected ERA, 1.3 projected whip. Taj Bradley's a guy that, you know, in his first stint in the bigs in 23, struggled, but, you know, the underlying stuff looked good. 2024 pitched much better. Still not great, but much, much better. This past year, it all just disappeared, Ryan. The strikeout rate dropped to 21% to an 11.7% K to walk, which is not great. His left on base rate still stinks. Babbitt wasn't bad, though, so that's a plus. But it was one of those really confusing seasons because, like, the home run to fly ball was actually lower than it's been in his previous two seasons. He was just giving up a lot of damage. Still had the similar, you know, basically four pitches, depending on his mix. Where are you at on Taj Bradley? Because I still like the skill set of Taj Bradley. I'm hoping he can get fixed, but because he looked beyond broken last year.
Yeah.
But right now, you can get him at an ADP of like 360.
Yeah, and I don't really know. All right, that ADP is right next to Brandon Pfaadt. So if we frame it that way, like I'd much rather try Taj Bradley than
me too.
Than Pfaadt. I believe in Minnesota's pitching culture organization. I think there's something there in terms of they can work with Taj Bradley, and there's a reason they acquired him and bought so low on Taj last year. That said, there needs to be a lot of improvement for Taj to be rosterable, right? It was a massive drop in strikeouts, drop from 27 to 21% on the K rate, pretty much same type of drop in swinging strikes. So he deserved the low strikeout rate. I don't know if there was any kind of hidden injury here or anything. The velocity held firm. Like, he threw 164 innings across both teams in the minors last season, Bradley did. So I don't really know what went awry with Taj Bradley, but I do know Minnesota knows what they're doing from a pitching standpoint. I do know Taj is probably going to have a spot in the rotation. I do know Taj has been pretty good in 2023 and 2024, and I do know the price is pretty cheap. So you kind of take all that together. That's a pitcher who I'm going to, take a stab on at or stab at on, I don't know, at 360 ADP. I think that's a decent spot where you target someone who's been good before, is in a good organization, has a job, and is still young enough to turn it around.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on Taj. I think there's still some meat on that bone, as they might say. All right, let's look at the fallers side of things, Ryan. Like Trevor Rogers, I think we all agree, outperformed his skills. I don't think he falls to a 4.16, 1.34 whip guy, if we believe in the skills, but like I believe like he's still very, very good.
That's the question you got to ask yourself is, right, it's not regressed. It's regressed to what? Is it a 4.16 ERA, 1.34 whip? I will take the under, the better of both of those ratios. But I still think like, I mean, HQ with a forecaster, we've got Trevor Rogers just a tick below 4 ERA and like a 1.24 whip, which I think is a little bit more accurate than what we're showing here, a little bit more optimistic than Steamer. So I think something like that for Trevor Rogers is fine. I think Rogers is going right next to who the hell did we just talk about? Sandy.
Right here. Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, correct. So, ADP's 157, so yes.
That's I don't know who I'd rather have right now, but
I think Rogers, because I know he's at least healthy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Sandy should be healthy, don't get me wrong, but I have a little more confidence in what we saw with Rogers.
Yeah, biggest thing for Rogers for me was the velocity and the whiffs came back, and he threw more strikes. So more strikes thrown, more whiffs, and an uptick in velocity. Not quite back to like peak Trevor Rogers when he had that awesome 2021 season, but things are looking pretty damn good for him right now.
Agreed. Some of these guys I'm just going to kind of like glance by. Like Nate Eovaldi, we both think is going to be pretty good just based on the injury. I think we're okay there. Cade Horton. Let's talk Cade. I've written about him this offseason. I talked about him on FPAS. Haven't heard you talk about him as much because I take all the wind out of the room. Cade Horton, he had a 2.67 ERA and a 1.08 whip. Great second half.
Yeah.
Projected for a 4.33 ERA and a 1.33 whip. Where do you fall in the middle there? Do you believe it regresses all the way back to that? Because the biggest question I tell people is you have to tell yourself, do you believe in the second half adjustments to stick?
Right. Which I think you do. I mean, that's what you've written about with Cade Horton, given that second half improvement. Like, I don't think you can. I think that needs to factor in, especially for someone who was a rookie last year. Like, I think you need to split first, second, and kind of dive deeper into some of these smaller samples because we just don't have much on a Cade Horton. I will add, and this is nothing groundbreaking. No, Cade Horton's not going to drop a 2.67 ERA and a 1.08 WHIP again next season. We all know that. I will add that kind of while Cade Horton improved and there were tangible changes to the arsenal to support that improvement in the second half, I still think this is more like a mid-high threes ERA type with like a 1.20 whip. So I'm more optimistic on Cade Horton than Steamer is at a 4.33, 1.33 there with the ERA and whip. But I don't think this is more than like an SP3 type for me.
No, I'm with you there. I don't think he's an ace by any means. He's not your like your second half fantasy darling ace. So I think he's pretty good though. So I'm with you on that. It's like, would you take like where he's going right now? It's 1.80. So he's going like right ahead, like as a Ranger Suarez, a little after the guys we just talked about with Sandy and company. How do you like Cade in that mix?
I'd probably take Ranger Suarez, but there's not a lot of great pitchers like that.
What about Cade versus Tanner Bibee? Who goes ahead of him?
Probably take Cade.
There you go.
Andrew Abbott's a little bit lower down. I'd rather have Cade Horton than Andrew Abbott.
Connolly Early's going right after him.
Yeah, I need to dive more into Early. I haven't.
It's a little too early for that.
God, you gotta not do that, man. You gotta gotta resist, dude. Let's move on. I forget what I was going to say.
Noah Cameron.
Here's your boy. The quote-unquote in round 10 of the Gladiator last night, the ratio stabilizer that you're trying to get me to draft Noah Cameron in the 10th round to lock in my ratios. What? Why would you say that? I guess. I'll read it off. Why would you say that?
2.99 ERA, 1.1 whip last year. I don't believe he's a 4.19, 1.34 guy that they haven't projected for. Now, I get he's a softer tossing lefty, not in that like big dominant range, but he's a decent ground ball guy, 40 to 42% ground ball situation there. What I'm kind of optimistic on with him is if you just look through his minor league numbers, much better strikeout guy and swinging strike guy. So I'm wondering if that could improve as he gets more comfortable at the big league level. That would be a big one for me. He plays in a nice pitcher's ballpark as well. I'm pretty optimistic on a guy in his rookie season throwing that well. I know you are not by any means, but like if you go even deeper, we saw a guy that three out of the last 4 months of the year had 21% or higher K rate. Two out of the last 3 months, 26% or higher strikeout rate. A K to walk of 16% or more in two out of the last 3 years. Like we saw improvements as the season went on, and that's kind of what I'm buying into with Noah Cameron. It was a much improved second half, at least in the strikeout department, and kind of followed with his improved ratios as well. Like, he had a higher ERA in the second half, but we saw a more dominating pitcher in the second half as well.
More dominating pitcher. Huh.
Well, the bar was low.
Yeah, the bar was low. I don't know, man. I just think this is I think there's more of a chance that Noah Cameron's more like a rich man's Cade Povich than a legit counting on SP4. And I don't know. I, like the park helps with Noah Cameron pitching in Kansas City is a big help. I just don't think there's much of a ceiling with Cameron. The one thing I do like is the second half of last year did bump up the swing strike a bit. So yeah. That is a good sign in terms of getting more whiffs for Noah Cameron, but I don't know, man. Nice. I mean, 4 ERA type guy with an okay whip and middling Ks, like that's fine. He's just, I think Noah Cameron's just a guy, which is fine. Eight. You need guys. You need back end rotation.
At least 23 of them.
You need 23 or 30. Or 50.
Yeah. Or 50. It depends on what degeneracy you're into. Yeah. But you did compare to Cade Povich. They're going 215 picks apart.
I know. I know that's a little hot takey. But I did say rich man's Cade Povich. But I
don't hate it. I love Cade Povich. Like, I actually probably rather in a vacuum have Cade Povich over Noah Cameron. I'm with you on that. I think the skills of Povich, at least for fantasy, Cameron might be a better real life pitcher where Povich is, because like Cameron, he had more of those like quality starts that kept the Royals in games, where Povich is like, it's boom or bust when he takes the mound. So
true.
Real life versus fantasy, basically. All right. Speeding along here, Hunter Green, I think we both agree is great. He's just got to stay healthy. Drew Rasmussen, I think we both agree is good. Just needs to get the innings and Hunter Brown elite. Do you have anything on those three guys before I keep moving along here?
I think Hunter Green has top five starting pitcher upside. It's just all about the health. But Hunter Green last year's skills were freaking electric. I would much take the under on a 3.94 ERA, 1.19 WHIP for Hunter Green. I think that's way too pessimistic for Hunter Green. Hunter Brown, I think though.
Go ahead. I want to say something about Hunter Green. Yeah. Let me ask you this though. He threw 150 innings in 2024, 107 last year. They haven't projected for 184.
Yeah, I'd take the under on that as well.
I just want to throw that out there just for the listeners in case they wonder. Okay, Hunter Brown, what you got there?
I don't know if Hunter Brown is elite, honestly. I actually
he's on both my shows now.
I think the Steamer projection is not that far off for Hunter Brown. 3.64 ERA, 1.23 WHIP. I don't know, just doesn't miss a ton of bats, doesn't throw a ton of strikes. He gets some ground balls, but like, I think Hunter Brown's a good pitcher. I don't know if he's a like SP1 anchor. I think he's more an SP2 type, but you're not getting Hunter Brown at that price.
Hunter Brown, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. I like Hunter Brown a lot. I think he's very good. You know, the projection of a 3.64, 1.23, still not bad. Is he an ace? Probably not. And that's why I want to highlight this. He's like the fifth or sixth pitcher off the board right now. If you rank, this is one thing Ben and I did, so I'll kind of do a behind, if you haven't listened to those shows yet, Hunter Brown's the 21st ranked pitcher according to Steamer. And he's like the fifth one off the board. So I'm trying to explain, like, kind of, I'm backing up Ryan's claim, basically. Like, is he bad? No. But is he an ace? Probably not. At the same time. That's kind of what you were saying, right?
Yep. Yeah. No, that's exactly. Like, I think he's good. I don't think he's top five or even top 10. Which is the price you're going to have to pay.
Exactly. That's one reason I like doing the episodes with Ben, because it kind of showcased the deals. And then we come over here. It all works together in a good way. Ryan Nelson, I do want to talk about, though. Because Ryan Nelson's one of those guys that's just like, dude, like he's kind of what we wanted Brandon Faught to be. And now Ryan Nelson's doing it. You know, I know where he went to college, been well documented. He's an Oregon Duck. So that's understandable because they still can't change his picture on the NFBC.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's why everyone thinks of that, because he's still got his damn duck hat on.
It's wild. 3.39 ERA last year at the 107 whip was outstanding. We finally saw those things. They haven't projected for a 4.38, 1.33 whip. Kind of goes back to your Spencer Strider thing. They're just using previous years, and that checks. But Ryan, I'll give you the rest of the floor here before I say too much. What did we see in Ryan Nelson last year that goes, okay, wait a minute. Like, this is a dude maybe we can buy into now, especially at an ADP of close to 255.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice step forward for Ryan Nelson. The velocity was up, more whiffs, and he held it over pretty much a starter's workload, 23 starts, 154 innings. So, like, yeah, I fully expect Ryan Nelson to not put up another 3.39 ERA, 107 whip, but can Ryan Nelson be a solid 4 ERA type with a whip in, like, the mid-teens? I think so. Throws a ton of strikes, always has had a pretty good walk rate, and like I said, if he can now pair that with a little bit higher velocity, a few more missed bats, get some K's in there, I like Ryan Nelson, and I'm much more optimistic on Nelson than Steamer's 4.38 1.33 ERA and whip.
Yeah, I'm on board with you on Nelson. I think that's a really good one. There's that ADP we talked about. There's definite room to run. Like Merrill Kelly, Noah Cameron goes right ahead of him. Give me Ryan Nelson all day in that conversation.
I would too.
Right behind. No, this is interesting. Right behind Ryan Nelson, three picks later, Casey Mize.
Mize. Bailey Ober's right there too.
Yeah, Bailey Ober's right there. Yeah, I take Nelson over Ober. But I'm also much more out on Ober. You seem more.
No, I would take there. I would take Nelson over Ober. Okay. I'm not crazy.
You do podcasts with me twice a week, so some might argue that.
Yeah, it's not.
Nick Pivetta, I think we both just professed our love. Like my takeaway from the panel up there is, yeah, we saw 287, 0.99 whip. Outstanding. Projections have him 3.96, 1.20. It's like we've waited for Pivetta to do this forever. He finally did it. Got lucky on the home runs or regressed the home runs a ton. Can that stick is the question. Otherwise, if it doesn't stick, then the 3.96, 1.20 feels pretty good.
It's kind of funny. Nick Pivetta, I think he's like a 10-year career at this point, has never finished a season with an ERA in the threes. So it's pretty much all been above fours, but then he goes out and spikes a 2.87 last year. Yeah, the panel, I thought at first pitch covered Pivetta quite well. The TLDR. For the folks that weren't at first pitch was, and I agree with TLDR.
Yeah. What's that mean?
Too long. Didn't read.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that? Have you seen TLDR before?
I have. And I have no idea what it ever, I'm old. No clue.
Yeah. See, I'm teaching. You teach me Bible verses and I teach you
to turn on a projector. Yeah.
And my mouse last night. Yeah. So the TLDR. On Pivetta from the column was I think we're more likely to lean the former version of Pivetta. I just think there was a lot of luck involved in 2026. I do think this will be the first year where Nick Pivetta posts an ERA in the threes. However, I don't think he's that bad.
Yeah, I think we like legit 3.7 ish.
Something like 1.15.
Like the whip 1.2 fine. But 3.7, like he probably has a better whip than 1.2. But I think he's still a very, very good pitcher when things are all said and done, especially for a guy with an you got to pay an ADP of 92. So he's right next to Framber.
Yeah. No, he's
Jesus Lazardo, Spencer Strider. Like that's a pocket right there.
He's pricey. Sure. Gets you K's though. Like the strikeout should be there. I mean, 13 wins last year. We don't talk about wins that often, but San Diego's a pretty good squad. Pivetta can pitch deep into games. I think the price is fine for Pivetta at what do you say, 96, right around 100. So
yep,
I think that's fine. Not great, not bad. It's properly priced right now, in my opinion.
Agreed. I don't got much on Freddie. I think he's still great. He has his ratio issues from time to time, but as a whole, I will echo this part. They haven't projected for a 1.23. ER whip, and people always think like it's a term I've heard from many. He's always a whip problem. Let me tell you guys, 108, 121, 112, 104, 0.97, 116. Outside of one season, it's been pretty dang good. Like, his whips have been very, very good. It's more about the innings. He's up that every year. He's got three straight years of 200 Ks, four out of five of 195 or more. I love Freddie Peralta. And I think 391 might be a little rich. I think he's more of a 3.5 below guy and a much better whip than 123.
Agreed. And just going through this exercise with you in this show and listening to what you and Ben have gone, is this should reinforce why we think these steamer projections on the ratio side are just a little inflated across the board. I think that's been a common thing. It's like, is us saying, yeah, I think they're going to fall or rise, but not quite to as bad as what steamer's saying. So again, just kind of a blanket macro level takeaway here.
You got anything on Adrian Houser? I'm just going to leave it at that blanket statement, because he was really good last year. He's a free agent, but the projections have him going back to a 4.48 ERA and a 1.42 whip, which I'm not going to say is fully out of the realm of possibilities.
No, I'll just share the last sentence of Hauser's forecaster box. It's, this house has a slippery foundation, courtesy of Tanner Smith. I think that's 100%. I'm not taking Adrian Houser anywhere.
Chris Bubich falling back to earth makes sense. Injury, we don't even know his timetable, so that checks out. What do you got on Yoshinobu Yamamoto? He had a 2.49 ERA, 0.99 whip, postseason darling. Projections have him at 3.42, 1.19, which is still totally acceptable. Like, if you got that from him, you'd be ready to roll, but is that too kind?
No, I think that's too harsh. Oh, I don't think Yoshi throws a 3.42 ERA. I think this guy is an elite stud. He checks every single box. The last box we were waiting to check with Yamamoto was the volume. And looking back, I mean, even if you look at Yamamoto's overseas innings in 2021, it was 194, 193, 157, then had 90 his first year with LA, right back up to 174 plus, you know, pitching probably another 174 innings in the playoffs this season. So you look at the 20% K to walk, you look at the underlying ball rate, swing strike to support that, you look at a 52% ground ball rate for Yamamoto. I think I would say an ERA right around three with a very good whip to pair with that is probably a decent expectation. And Yamamoto, I think, he's closer to me. He's not only my SP4. I think he's closer to the Crochet, Skeen, Scooble group than he is Hunter Brown, who's going SP5. I think he's closer to that top group than he is the next group.
I don't disagree with that, but he was projected for 161 innings. He went through 173 plus postseason last year. Do you worry at all with the Dodgers and the way they temper things?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean,
maybe the only thing that would take me off of him is four, but
there's 174 last year. Like, maybe it knocks off a few wins. Like Yamamoto pitching for the Dodgers last year, you would think 174 innings of a 2.49 ERA, you'd get more than just 12 wins. So maybe just not pitching deep into games, that knocks a couple wins off the ledger over a full season. But I don't know, man. I think that's like extreme nitpicking at this point. I think he's really good. Fair.
I don't got much on Brian Bayo or Steven Kolek, unless you've got something to add to the party there.
No, I feel like, I don't know why I feel this way. I feel like people like Kolek. Maybe just
I recommended him in Fab last year. Because, well, last year he was pitching well, but I also realized that was probably a nice run, is what we'll call it.
Yeah. Agreed. I don't think Steven Kolek's all that great. Forecaster projections pretty much are actually more pessimistic than they are on Steamer for Kolek. So, yeah, not looking to target Kolek at all.
All right. What are your final thoughts on the board here before we get to a nice listener question from the chat?
No, just what I said earlier about the inflated ratios. I won't repeat it, but just keep that in mind when you're looking at projections or using a draft tracker. If you might be doing that, just keep that in mind that, you don't have to agree with these projections. That's fine. But if you do notice kind of a league-wide bump in something, just know that and, you know, have that context around it. Projections are not gospel. You need to add your own flavor to it.
Yep, just a discussion point is where things begin. All right, in the Discord here, we got this morning. It was very good, kind of ties in with the draft from Tuesday evening.
Yep.
Ben Bingham says, would you guys discuss the limitations of draft trackers at some point? We were using them in the draft on Tuesday night. We had a lot of thoughts on that throughout the draft. Ben says, we saw at some of the Live Gladiator that some players aren't projected at all, i.e. foreign players, and some aren't projected well. That's kind of the exercise we did now, what you do that with other players. What upsides and downsides are there to optimizing your picks directly based on the tracker versus using it as a general guide to make sure your categories are on track during the draft? My experience is that trackers become more helpful later in the draft as you need to balance out the team with later picks, and I want to come up with my favorite players and values for each position so I stay flexible during the draft and capture values throughout without worrying a lot about staying on the right categorical balance the whole time. Yeah. So Ryan, I know you taught me something last night that you can edit if the projections aren't there in the draft tracker, but what's your thoughts on this limitations potentially with draft trackers?
Yeah, I just think with anything, baseball, life, whatever, you know, input equals output. The better the input, typically, the better the output for whatever you do. Garbage in, garbage out is a saying. I'm not saying projections are garbage right now, but there are limitations to those projections. And you have the best draft tracker thing in the world and have all this stuff, but if the inputs that you're using, say Raisel Iglesias, for example, is projected for zero saves, then whatever you get output from that is not going to be good. So what I think the biggest downside with using a draft tracker is drafting to the spreadsheet and not worrying about your team. It's a natural tendency to want to do that. You type in your player or whatever, and you see what it is. Oh, I need more runs. Let me get a runs guy. Projections are very much prone to error. Especially this early when we're only using one system, they can get honed in a little bit later. I'm thinking probably January as more systems come online, we start averaging that all in. What I would recommend using trackers for right now is just general balance. Like if I'm even on home runs and I'm way behind on steals, I just need to know that I need to, for my next few picks, you know, maybe target some stolen base guys and just have a general balance. I am not looking at, do I hit my, you know, 260 home run total. If I fall back, and I'm only projected for 257, I need to get someone with more home runs than the other guys so my draft tracker sheet says I hit my target. That's not how I like to use it. I like to use it for just general balance. And then the other thing that you mentioned last night, and I'll hand this back to you, Bubba, is I also like to put in there, if I take this guy, what does that do to my batting average? I think you did that exact thing last night. It was like, oh, let me see what my team batting average would drop down to if I took this guy. How does that affect my stats? That's a fun kind of what if type of exercise you can use a tracker for. So at the end of the day, yeah, inputs are just as good as outputs. You need to focus on your inputs as much as you can. That's what drives it. Don't draft to win your spreadsheet and just use it really at this point as general balance for your team, making sure you're not falling behind really in either batting average, homers, or steals. That's all. I'm not really looking at runs and RBI at this point. It's just projections are just so prone to wide error bars that I think that's a poor exercise.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things I use it for, the balance part, to your point. Like last night I was like late in the draft going, okay, I'm really short on steals compared to other things, and then that brought the question, okay, Anthony Volpe's out there, man, but it's batting average, so I put him in. And I was like, okay, it doesn't crush my batting average as much as I thought because of the other variables I had on my team already. Yep. And then the input on increase in steals helps a ton type question. So it's more of a balance because in reality, we're using projections. Obviously, projections aren't perfect. Like when we did stuff with Ben earlier this offseason, it came out that projections were like 50% accurate because some guys get hurt, some guys, like all these factors to it. Yep. Like if you do a per plate appearance, maybe they're more accurate, but just in general, like 50% of the players they're pretty good at, 50% they miss on. So when we're doing our drafts and we're using a draft tracker, we're using something that's 50% right. So let's just do that. Like you said, input in, input out. And I think also if we're drafting, especially our earlier picks, we got to be optimistic they're going to outperform the projections. So like if we're picking a guy in the first round, we think he's gonna be really, really good. Like most guys aren't projected for 30 seasons. And we might go, hey, this guy might go 35-35. That's what I think he's gonna do. Well, you either type that into the thing or you're gonna use whatever projection system's in there. In reality, you're already skewed. Yep. So it's just more of a guide to, like Ryan said, to kind of make sure I'm not getting out of whack on like strikeouts, stolen base, all the stuff Ryan talked about, because ratios get wild. You want to make sure you're in the ballpark, but you're trying to, like, one reason we don't really like, you know, pitching projections is because you go try to predict ratios, knock yourself out. Like, I'm interested in the innings. I'm interested in the playing time. That's about as far as pitching goes for me, because you can't predict wins. Saves, not really, but I think you can predict saves better than wins.
Like, you know, you need two closers. So, yeah. You know, what that's, yeah.
So those kind of things. But for the most part, like Ryan said, it's like I'm looking for balancing out my main stats that I know I can kind of have a game plan on how to attack. And that's the kind of the name of the game. And we used it live last night. Like Ryan had Iglesias, who, because he's a free agent, not projected for saves. Ryan typed in X amount of saves and at least gives him an idea where things are going. Like he had a couple Japanese players. For some reason, Steamer has never projections for them. So he edited things to like what the audience basically thought, typed just to give him a baseline of where he's going. So, and last thing I'll say, the projections are going to get better as ATC, as the bat, as Steamer makes adjustments, they're going to update stuff. Cause like I told you, Ryan, as that's another thing, is we've seen how much Steamer, like what we see now compared to what we'll see in March, it's almost completely different on the way they look at players. And that'll probably fine tune your draft trackers as well. So using one this early, it's November, there's going to be a lot of holes with your input in, input out, to Ryan's point.
Exactly. And there were a few follow-ups in the Discord on that. Both Dustin and John Wilder were in there kind of saying the same thing. It's like basically kind of until January, maybe ATC comes out. There's other, you know, the bat comes out in January. That's really when I think the projections are, they're never going to be even much better than 50%. They're general guidelines, but at least they'll pass the smell test a little bit more. Remember, it is November 20th when this episode releases. It's still very early, so take it with a grain of salt. One last thing I'll just mention with the draft tracker on our Patreon, at least for draft and holds, I use it a ton to fill in my bench and make sure I'm balanced in terms of which positions I've got pre-filled out slots for, you know, a backup for second, third, a backup corner, middle, based on kind of what the most successful teams have done in draft and holds in the past. And so I do use it to make sure I have proper coverage from a position standpoint on the hitter side, and then also my reliever starter split on the hitter side. I've got kind of rows specified for those types of slots that I try to adhere to in terms of just how many guys I have at each position.
Yep, totally agree. And thanks for the question. That's a good question. Very good question. So keep that kind of stuff coming, and we'll help you as we can as we draft season's in full go. I know it's ramping up for some, but like that, the degeneracy, like Ryan's drafting, I'm about to enter a second draft while my first one basically is hitting round 30 where the clock speeds up. We got, there's always someone asking, hey, I jumped in a draft. You want to come join us? Like in the Discord, it's happening. So the live draft was awesome. We actually said maybe we'll try to do some more. We'll see. It's just tough with our schedules with the little ones and whatnot, but people liked this much. We had a blast doing it. We might try to make that happen. No promises, but final thoughts, Ryan, before we head out of here for the weekend.
No, man. Enjoy your weekend. I'm heading down with Burks, going to USC, Oregon. So
I was wondering if you're going to go to that. That's a big one.
Yeah, game days coming to Eugene, which, again, like, come on, go somewhere else. Go to Montana.
We have game day. You have game day, you have CBS Sports. You have a bunch of people coming that way.
Oh, it's a big one. Major playoff implications. It'll be it'll be a very good time. I can't wait for it. 12:30 local, so I won't get back. You know, I'll get back at a reasonable hour, which will be nice too.
I recommend some of the apple pie drinks we had at the golf course. It'll keep you nice and warm.
Apple pie drinks.
Those little shooters.
Okay. That's
you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do know what you're talking about. I did not have them, so I had the original.
Oh, well, try them. I highly recommend them. They'll keep you very warm while you're at the game. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I have gymnastics and God knows what else this week, and I can't even remember right now. But yeah, fun dad stuff over here for me as you enjoy football, which is good for you. And reminder to everybody, if you missed Tuesday night show, that next week will be live Tuesday evening, and then we'll pre-record for Thanksgiving. You're not re-recording on Thanksgiving, so yeah. You'll get two episodes. This is how the winter goes for us. We have lives, and this is kind of like we record. You're going to get two every week. Just kind of depends on how
we'll figure it out as we go.
But until then, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Entrick, and this was Bubba the Bloom, episode 296. Catch y'all next time.